I'm going to talk a little briefly about myself, try to address some of the questions, the four questions posed to me by the moderator, and also share some of my experience at the interface of dealing with cultural diversity, particularly from the East Asian sector in this country. Something that Jatinder just said about roots just reminded me of what the first time I felt I had roots in this country. I came here as a child when I was six in 1970 from Hong Kong. And it took me 22 years later, I think, when I bought my first flat in 92. That was the first time I actually felt I had some roots in this country. I felt I wanted to stay here. So in that kind of brief, hopefully that'll kind of give you a sense of where I'm coming from and where my sector is coming from. I've worked for 21 years in the sector as an actor, writer, director, 13 years as the founder, artistic director of Yellow Earth Theatre, and now 3 years as the part-time creative director of Chinatown Art Space, or CAS. Over that period, I've engaged with different British East Asian communities. So East Asian, I mean Chinese, Vietnamese, Japanese, Filipino, Korean, Tibetan, etc. Mostly in theatre, but also in other art forms through CAS now, such as music, dance, visual arts, and so on. Engagement in my theatre work has ranged from productions inspired by British East Asian or BEA experience. So, for example, a piece called Play to Win, centred on a troubled Filipino teenager drawn into gang culture. Another story, 58, paralleled English and Chinese migrants forced by economic or emotional reasons to move home. Work for children that I've done has included The Snow Lion, an allegory about the Tibetan situation, The Nightingale, which explored why an emperor might abuse his own people, and Kensuke's Kingdom charted the horrors of war and the hope of reconciliation across generational and linguistic divides. I've also adapted Western classics such as King Lear, which were adapted to reflect part of the modern Chinese diaspora. Things like linguistic miscommunication and Confucian conflict between the generations. And recently I worked on the Chinese classic Whitesnake, which I adapted for East 15 Drama School, which pitched transgressive lovers against religious persecution. Very fitting for our times. And at that drama school, I worked with majority Caucasian students who had been trained there to perform in Beijing opera, in Jingju. And I had to actually work harder to teach them European naturalism. So, you know, that's a prime example of the kind of intercultural state of the UK at the moment, really, where, you know, some knowledge of Beijing opera, but actually the choreographer was a white American who trained in China and worked with me to choreograph the piece. So that's exactly the kind of melting pot, really, that the UK is all about. Okay, so you can see you can see that most of my work has been political with a small p. The struggle for liberation of a young individual or minority against an authoritarian older regime. And perhaps recent events in London bring this graphically to mind. The students on the streets and so on. This struggle is universal and specific, intergenerational and intercultural. But actually, even if I were to do something completely mainstream, like a British East Asian musical, for example, that would still be a political act in the current context of the UK landscape, of how visible or invisible my sector is. So, you know, in terms of art form and style that Jatinder referred to, for my sector, it doesn't really matter. Just the fact of doing something is actually quite a political act. Alongside the content, I've worked with industry professionals to try and raise the quality of British East Asian arts in the UK, such as mentoring for writers, and challenge the enforced invisibility imposed on us by the British media. CAS has just won a major national competition called New Music 20x12 and been awarded one of only 20 commissions for composers Liz Liu and Andy Leung for the Culture Olympiad in 2012. Yellow Earth Theatre has toured nationally across the UK and played in almost every major regional rep. Its International East Asian Play Reading Festival engaged established white, black and South Asian directors to work with quality East Asian scripts and BEA actors, many of them for the first time. This intercultural exchange resulted in some actors being employed for the first time by various directors at Soho Theatre. International productions have toured to Denmark, Hong Kong, Shanghai and Chongqing, supported by the British Council, showing a very new face of the UK. Education and community outreach has been an important part of everything both Yellow Earth and Cass have done. Cass has run workshops in rap music, film music, contemporary and traditional dance, public art and sculpture, and Yellow Earth has devised theatre projects targeted at different BEA communities, both young and old. I first encountered composer Andy Leung at a Cass workshop 2 years ago, and then tracked him down to encourage him to apply to the New Music 20x12 opportunity. And without an organisation like Cass, Andy and Liz would not have applied. And they said that at a press launch last night to the Chinese press. You know, Liz has been in the industry, music industry, for quite a while, but she saw this and thought, oh yeah, you know, another scheme. She really wasn't going to apply until she got a push from me. And, out of thousands of applicants across the country, they've been awarded only one of 20 things. It's a really significant step forward for the music sector. Okay, the various BEA, British East Asian Community Centres and language schools have been instrumental in allowing us access to different BEA groups across the UK. The BEA media have also played an important role in helping us break down mistrust in sometimes slightly isolated communities. In this context, BEA primarily translates as the British Chinese community. This is the oldest and largest demographic amongst BEA communities, so it has more widespread networks. The first recorded Chinese was Sheng Fu Song at the court of James II in 1686. The Japanese community, while smaller, is well supported by Japanese trusts and foundations, so there are often Japanese cultural events in London, including at the embassy. Plans are underway for a Japanese cultural centre in London. The Korean community, riding the current wave of its cultural dominance in East Asia, has benefited from their government's generosity with an impressive Korean cultural centre which holds numerous Korean events. Even the Vietnamese now have a prestigious dedicated gallery in Mayfair. So I've often wondered why the British Chinese business community don't seem to support arts and culture as proactively as Chinese corporations do in Hong Kong, Singapore, Taiwan, and the urban centres in China. Culturally, the Chinese have always been slightly suspicious of artists. Failed academics and professionals is the common belief. Confucius placed great emphasis on education, and British Chinese get a hell of a lot of pressure from their parents to succeed. It's the reason why I did a law degree first, to placate my very traditional mother. It's also the reason why, in two generations, working class Hong Kong Chinese from the rural New Territories have produced children who statistically are the most academically successful in the UK. The majority go on to study law, medicine or accountancy, IT or financial services. This is repeated across other Chinese diasporas, with East Asian Americans dominating the top universities. There's 20% of them at Harvard. We're supposedly the model minority, hardworking, conscientious, law-abiding, the complete opposite to the common stereotype of triads and gangsters you see on film and television all the time in the West. Very few are encouraged or choose to study the arts. It's not generally regarded as serious work, and considering our cultural invisibility in the UK, not an area that would seem to offer opportunities to people like us. So, persuading British Chinese community centres or weekend language schools to facilitate artists working with their young people can be fraught with difficulties. I've always had to stress that we're not try to distract the kids from their studies. Just give them alternative interests, hobbies, life skills. That drama is good for public speaking and assertiveness. And it'll be very useful for them in their future careers as professionals. And even in somewhere like Hong Kong, where obviously Chinese people are the majority, if Zhongying Theatre wants to teach drama, they are met with a lukewarm response. Now, but if they say that they want to teach English through drama, teachers and parents enthusiastically sign up. I found that bilingual communication is a really important factor when talking with these BEA gatekeepers. I've noticed that many Hong Kong people will trust me a lot more once I show them I can say something in Cantonese. It's the reason why I've tried to learn smatterings of other East Asian languages, just to help break the ice and not seem like a Caucasian intruder. Of course, most people converse in English in the UK, but within BEA language schools or community centres, it can feel as if you've stepped into East Asia, since the adults often converse in mother tongue. Now, from a marketing perspective, I've always tried to include a translation of the title into the mother tongue of whichever East Asian community that play covers. At the end of the day, most of my work is in English, and the copy for poster, print, or e-flyer will say that. But I think a gesture, a linguistic nod in the appropriate direction, married with a suitable image, meets older members of the BEA community halfway. However, even for someone like me, it's hard to remember all the time, given that English is my first language, and print or marketing is often done by a Caucasian member of staff. Really, I suppose the lesson to learn is to make sure you employ bilingual marketing freelancers. There's a fantastic woman who works in the UK called Mei Yong to target British Chinese audiences. For those from our background who are brave enough to become arts professionals, Yellow Earth ran development training programs for writers, directors, and after I left, producers and actors. All this led to a movement of sorts, a flowering of a number of smaller BEA theatre companies producing their very first production during the last decade. Chinese, Japanese and Malaysian work, gay work, topical work about 7/7. One can confidently say that investment into the intercultural work of BEA arts has transformed into a greater cultural voice for the sector as a whole. Now, that voice has taken about 8 years to warm up. For emerging BEA writers, I ran a workshop very early on to discuss drawing on personal history and creating BEA characters. Two of the writers there had never written a BEA character in their life. They'd been so influenced by their British education that they couldn't seem to imagine a BEA character on stage. They'd given life to Caucasian and Latino characters, but never anyone from their own cultural background. A young British Japanese writer asked whether audiences would believe in an English teacher character portrayed by someone East Asian. I asked her what her ambitions were, and she said, writing and teaching English. So the UK's Eurocentric education system had so skewed this young person's self-image that she was limiting her own potential and the artistic options open to her. It also shows that lack of role models becomes a self-perpetuating thing, a kind of internalised racism. And Gok Wan, who's a celebrity in this country, for those who don't know him, he's lovely, but clearly not a role model for everyone. The other British Chinese writer in this group, who'd never written a BEA character, eventually did write a play inspired by his father's life story. I think it's the best work he's done to date, and he got a great review in Time Out. His previous work had been rather dry and intellectual, whereas this piece was much more authentic, personal and moving. He wrote about the world he knew, one he'd lived and experienced, not just read about. When I've worked with other BEA communities, whether it's Tibetan, Filipino, or Vietnamese, I've always included some use of mother tongue in the productions to break the monolithic stranglehold that English has in British theatre. I want to remind audiences that the linguistic world of the play that they're seeing might be completely different, even if the play is set entirely in the UK. Hearing some of your mother tongue on stage goes a long way to affirming the positive nature of your bicultural heritage. My five nephews and nieces, when they were growing up in small towns here in the Midlands, all said they didn't want to be Chinese. Fortunately, that's changed once they got older. A recent report by the Institute of Education and the National Centre for Languages shows that English is a second language for 40% of London pupils. That's an extraordinary statistic. And in the borough of Tower Hamlets, that figure rises to almost 75%. English is a second language for London students. That's obviously not replicated across the whole of the UK, obviously not in the home counties. I know in Leicester, you know, I think places like Birmingham, they will eventually, Birmingham, I think, is due to become majority culturally diverse by a particular year. So you know, the UK is very different depending where you are. But the fact that London has that level of diversity and linguistic diversity. Bilingualism is common in many modern British families, and the monolingual artistic directors in most UK venues find this bicultural divide a tricky one to navigate. My suggestion is that they engage with culturally diverse associate directors to help reflect the state of the nation today, rather than some whimsical Enid Blyton version of Blighty, comforting though that might be. One of the questions we were asked was to address social and political progress, how intercultural work translates and transforms into that. And I think it's really difficult to assess that. Because if you flip that on its head, does Shakespeare's quality of mercy speech from The Merchant of Venice transform our judicial system? When King Lear sees a beggar, poor Tom, and cries, "Oh, I have taken too little care of this," do politicians sit up and tackle poverty and homelessness? Yet we celebrate these great plays as art that speaks to our sense of humanity, as civilising forces on our social outlook, irrespective of our cultural backgrounds. What I do believe is that intercultural work enables us to engage and access other cultural groups amongst us so that we communicate more effectively with one another. The research I conducted for The Butcher's Skin, a famous Vietnamese comedy, opened up a whole new community to Yellowearth. That community is often interconnected with the British Chinese community, but also has its own very distinct churches, temples, and so on. I think respect amongst different groups comes from genuine engagement and dialogue, and is a two-way street. Without mutual respect, we get such anger and resentment developing in some marginalised communities that violence can sometimes erupt. There was a murder of a head teacher called Philip Lawrence in London, at a London school, by a very troubled Filipino teenager and his gang, which is one example of that. That story inspired the production Play to Win. I suppose at the other end of the spectrum are events like 7/7, where marginalised communities feel so disenfranchised, disconnected. There's such a sense of not belonging here that they hit back, you know. And I, although one doesn't sanction that kind of violence, but you can understand it. Another reason why it is difficult to assess how much intercultural work translates into policy and strategy is that the BEA sector seems to move two steps forward and then one step back, depending on who is a gatekeeper. There was one visionary director, a woman called Vicky Ireland, who ran Polka Theatre for Jordan for many years, and she created a very fertile environment in the 90s that led directly to the flowering of Yellowearth Theatre. After her departure in 2002, there have only been two pieces of BEA work there: The Nightingale in 2006, and the fantastic production of Monkey in 2008, which was directed by my colleague Jonathan Mann in the audience. There have been no further attempts to unearth new BEA talent other than a couple of play readings which were not developed any further. And those play readings had enormous potential. There was a British-Vietnamese one that was extremely moving. And I think it was short-sighted not to try and invest a little further. I'll give you another example. A very prestigious venue in London that had ignored Yellowworth for 13 years, despite repeated invitations to come and see the work, suddenly programmed us into their venue in 2008, the year of the Beijing Olympics. The programmer had never seen the company's work. China was flavour of the month. Fortunately, we delivered and the show sold out. But to me, that really smacks of tokenism rather than a strategic approach towards developing artistic relationships or truly representing diversity in the UK. And even for those who say that they support this sector, for example, the Arts Council ran an initiative for many years called Decibel. Faux pas are made, I had to point out that at the last Decibel, which was I think last year, a leaflet that was put out, so Decibel is about encouraging diverse practice. All the photographs that were featured, there were positive photographs, black performers, South Asian performers, disabled performers, Middle Eastern performers, etc., etc. And the one East Asian photograph they put on were white actors who had yellowed up in a production of Pacific Overtures at the Leicester Haymarket. Okay, even though the Arts Council support Yellowworth Theatre, it's the UK's only revenue-funded organisation. They're beginning to support CAST. They've given project funding to for the last 3 years. They could have asked these two organisations, "Do you have photographs? We've got masses of wonderful photographs." And yet they still made a mistake like that, and nobody noticed except me. So that is what I'm saying about how, even those who are supposedly on our side make these huge mistakes all the time. And that's why we still need to constantly speak up. It's so boring. I've been doing it for, so long, and it bores the pants. When Michael asked me to speak here, I thought, do I really want to? I've talked about this so many times, but it's still necessary. It really is necessary for my particular sector especially. There has been a push from an organisation called the BC Project to increase British-Chinese participation in the political life of this country. That's headed up by a lawyer, and various arts-related people have been involved in that group. There was a significant increase in the number of British-Chinese candidates standing at the last election, but perhaps this has more to do with the rise of China and a newfound confidence that their voices can no longer be ignored in the UK. Perhaps, in some indirect way, Yellowworth and CAS has contributed to that emerging confident voice. It's hard to quantify. Certainly, the arts-related people from the BC Project take an active interest in almost all BEA arts work because it's so thin on the ground. Where I can speak more specifically is in areas where I've seen a real change for myself. I worked on a large-scale outdoor work inspired by Chinese creation myths, Pangu and Nuwa, in Trafalgar Square in 2008 for the launch of the Beijing Olympics, and persuaded elderly members of a Tai Chi group from the Chinese Community Centre in Chinatown to participate in the show. On the 8th of August 2008, I appeared on BBC Two's Newsnight to discuss the opening ceremony and ended up having to defend China against a white commentator determined to attack her human rights record. Now, you've already heard that in my work, I'm keen to challenge social injustice, but there is an appropriate time and place. For the Chinese and many other Confucian-influenced East Asian cultures, the idea of face or giving respect is crucial. That evening, after one of the most beautiful opening ceremonies in living memory by the great artist and filmmaker Zhang Yimou, using that occasion as an excuse to kick China again on national television wasn't appropriate. Turn the tables and come 2012. Do you think the London opening ceremony will refer to atrocities in Iraq or the British slave trade? Of course not. We'll talk about, you know, the wonderful inventions of this country, the multiculti, how everybody is embraced and tolerated, blah, blah, blah. You know, we'll talk about the good things of the UK. We know, you know, the Olympics, it's a PR ceremony, it's a PR job. So why is that never applied? Every time I hear China discussed, it's always about its violation of human rights. There are so many Chinese people trying to change that within their own country. And it's you know, while we express solidarity with our democratic peers over there, in order to help for that country to change, people have to understand how the people think in that country, and they're not going to take former imperialist powers lecturing them on how you know, people who used to hang signs in Shanghai saying "No dogs or Chinamen." How the hell are they going to then lecture the Chinese about democracy? You have to understand history before you start lecturing other cultures. So, just in terms of, but in terms of the point, the question about social political progress in this country. So, the next day, despite the rain, the Chinese elderly volunteers were absolutely determined to show up for their voluntary outdoor performance. Surprisingly to me, because I didn't realise how politicised the Chinese community were here, many of them had actually watched Newsnight that evening, the previous evening, and they told me how proud they felt that after all their years of living in the UK, someone had finally managed to tell a white person what they'd been feeling for years. Traditionally, Confucian culture has taught these elderly Chinese not to speak up, to respect existing hierarchies. So perhaps, in some small way, this represents social and political progress when a marginalised group feels it has a voice. Certainly that group of elderly Chinese grew in confidence and were keen to continue performing and expressing themselves, as well as exerting their political rights in the UK. As I said before, progress for this sector seems to depend so heavily on gatekeepers giving new talent an opportunity. Arts Depot, a venue in London, recently appointed the Japanese children's company, 1,000 Cranes, appointed them as an associate artist. But this venue, we've heard, has just now had its council funding completely cut due to the situation in this country. So the arts sector landscape is never secure, making it difficult to continue sustainable development for the BEA sector. It's the main reason why, in the long term, I think CAS should manage its own multi-function small arts venue for both BEA performing and visual arts. Arts funding in itself is political, and support for BEA arts does not match BEA demographics nor reach anywhere near 1% of the total UK arts budget. The things that cultural work, addressing the things that cultural work can contribute to civil society, which other agencies cannot, are shared moments of compassionate insight. When in a group of diverse people, a shared experience happens, perspectives are challenged, audiences laugh or are moved to tears. Cultural work can collectively feed the soul. Those are moments when we suddenly move beyond ourselves, our own limited understanding, when we get a glimpse into another worldview, another perspective, and a discovery of others and our own humanity. Your third question. The level of political awareness in the cultural field, I think, is generally good in theatre, except in the practice of integrated casting or a genuine, sustainable commitment to programming quality, diverse work. Amongst other BEA artists, there is sometimes a rejection of identity politics. I just want to be an artist, not a BEA one. Belying an ignorance of the inroads made by artistic activists who have championed both quality and diversity. The New Music 20x12 CAS winner is a case in point. The composers won this award due to the quality of their musical talent, but they wouldn't have heard about the opportunity without Cass bringing it to their attention. Your fourth point. I think there are true synergies between cultural artistic work and awareness-raising stroke political campaign work, because until Yellow Earth started 15 years ago, there was no sense of an East Asian voice in British theatre. Much of that has changed. Many theatre professionals now ask Yellow Earth for advice about BEA actors, writers, designers, etc. And I think awareness of BEA thinking is clearest when it comes from BEA people. There are still venues that ignore this at their peril. One very well-known London venue workshopped a very famous Chinese story with a Caucasian director at the helm. Her assistant during these workshops was South Asian. The latter said to me that working with an established British Chinese actor who was a founder member of Yellow Earth brought much more authenticity and truth to the piece compared to the non-Chinese actors who were the majority in the workshop. Now I ask you, by extension, would that not also be true of directors? Unless they've lived in East Asia or researched an incredible amount, how much does a Caucasian or South Asian director really know about East Asian social mores? Won't this production, which I understand is going to happen either next year or the year after, won't this end up being just another tokenistic white person's view of the East, a kind of cultural imperialism? I've seen too many of these kind of productions in the UK, very well-meaning but woefully misguided. To conclude, if in politics it's been important to have greater female, ethnic, lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender and disabled representation so that these democratic views can be better heard, then this principle should also apply obviously in cultural life, so that human expression and perspective is not always given through a limited Eurocentric filter. And it's interesting that I'm picking up on something that Jatinder said as he finished, really. We should embrace artistically diverse work in the same way we enjoy and consume the diversity of world cuisine on our doorstep. If we let our stomachs lead the way, then our hearts and minds will follow. Thanks.